Don't be afraid to let your past be in the past and try to unlearn things that you might have learned subconsciously that don't serve you any longer because you just kind of get on autopilot. The Genie Show.
The beauty of being able to host a podcast is the power of connection. I'm able to connect with so many different people from all over the world. I get to learn about their morning routines. I get to learn about what they perceive as their definition of happiness, what they do to be more joyful, and the people that they spend time with. There's such power in connection. Not only is it an opportunity to learn, there's an opportunity to share, to create, to go through experiences together or through each other's perspectives. David Frangione grew up being blind in one eye. Now, this obviously came with experiences of bullying, of experiences of being treated differently. However, David immersed himself in an environment of feeling good. He was in pursuit of being a drummer. And he had a heightened sense of hearing and he experienced the world in a different way. But it didn't stop him from really immersing himself in feeling good. I've been reading Gabrielle Bernstein's Super Attractor, and she talks about the powers of creating and manifesting the life that you desire. Now, whether you believe in the woo-woo stuff or not, you can't deny that feeling good actually is pretty good. We all love to feel good. So what is it that makes you feel good? What is it that gets you out of bed and look forward to your day or your life? This episode with David Frangione talks about no matter the adversity or differences that you face from the world, feeling good is a key to propel you to happiness. Welcome to another episode of The Genie Show with Genie Sarasvati here. Joining me today is a very special guest. His name is David Frangione. David, welcome to The Genie Show and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
David, I love chatting to fellow audio people, I call them. If we were going to be a cult, we'd be audio people. And, you know, at the moment I see you in your great home office with a very cool get up in the background. Tell me, how did you land where you are today? Talk to me about the journey that you've gone on.
Well, at 2 years old, I was diagnosed with retinoblastoma, which is cancer of the eye. And as a result, they had to remove my right eye. So I've been blind in my right eye since two. The blessing in that is that I've never really known what it's like to see other than through one eye. And I think I developed a heightened sense of hearing and seeing in my left eye and just sensories in general from that experience. And there was a lot of trauma, as you can imagine, going through that as a kid and having a prosthetic eye and dealing with the meanness of other kids. And so what ended up happening as a result is my mom and dad, you know, really were very loving, very supportive as much as they could be. And I found music as a refuge. And music at a very, very young age became so important to me. I just lost myself in it, and specifically the drums. Now, I have no idea why there was a drum set at my house when I was 1 or 2 years old, but there was. And I have pictures of my playing and smashing the drums at that age. So it really started that young. And what's amazing about the journey is that one of the things I consider amazing is that because I got into the drums at such a young age and started literally banging it too and playing around 7 or 8 years old, starting playing on phone books and practice pads, and my parents sent me for lessons first at my elementary school, then with a private teacher, and wanted to see, like, is this something that David really is interested in, or is this a passing fad? I mean, you know, I'm 7, 8 years old. And they saw that it was very much a passion and very much something that was not going away. And by the time I was 12, I was playing gigs. I was booking my own bands. I was finding the roots that later on in my life, which of course I didn't realize at that time, were going to be very, very important, like understanding business, negotiations, logistics, practice routines, of course, playing live and playing in front of an audience, which is its own kind of experience in and of itself. And by the time I was 16, 17 years old, I had a lot of gigs under my belt. I was pretty experienced at playing live locally in the Boston area where I'm from. And I then found technology as I was in pursuit of being as great a drummer as I could be, studying with drum teachers such as Joe Morello, Louis Belson, Alan Dawson, world-class, world-famous drum teachers, and really seeing my pursuit and goals as, okay, I'm going to be a businessman, I'm going to be a drummer. But I learned early on that I didn't like the life of a drummer. I loved being a drummer, but I didn't like the life of a drummer. And what I mean by that is I saw that, you know, you're out till 4 or 5 in the morning every night. You're playing these gigs and you kind of, your whole life then revolves around that. And your life is in the hands of the lead singer or the lead guitarist of any kind of band that's going to make it. If I didn't go the studio route and I wanted to be in a band. And these things, because I was blessed to have so much exposure and experience that young, I was able to determine before I got out of my teens that I did not ideally want to make a living like that. It was my passion, but I didn't want it to really be my career, but I stayed on that path. And on that path, I found technology. And technology at the time, now we're in the mid 80s, was very much becoming a part of drumming. So I'm pursuing being a great drummer, and that leads technology into my world, even though I was kind of kicking and screaming at the beginning because I just wanted to play the drums. And I end up falling in love with technology and finding that I have a natural instinct for it as much or more than the drums. And that's when the journey really takes full flight. And these records and many others like them behind me all start to become part of my achievements. And I'll let you take it from there. I'm about 19 years old at this point and about to really break out in the technology world. And that's where I'll pause.
Wow. There's so many things that you mentioned there that I wanted to ask you some questions on. What really kind of struck me was that, you know, in spite of the, I guess, the indifference that you were experiencing at school as a result of, you know, being unable to see through one eye, you completely changed your environment and you immersed yourself in an environment that made you feel 100% good. You immersed yourself in sound and in the drum kit and everything like that. So it really kind of changed your mindset. So talk to me about your morning routine, David. I'm fascinated by people who, when they really shift their mindset or shift a moment in their life and that kind of accelerates or puts them on a path to a happier life. Talk to me about your morning routine.
I learned through a lot of years of being mentored and studying and doing a lot of what I'll call work on myself, the importance of a morning routine, because I didn't really ever take conscious note of it. For many of the years that I was successful, I did not have a morning routine that was by design. My morning routine looked like get up as early as you can, work as hard as you can, have a to-do list, you know, be organized and go for your goals. But I wouldn't call it really a routine. As years went on, I discovered the importance of an actual routine, which for me consists of getting up at 6:15, going in the gym, finishing in the gym, getting ready for the day, going to church. Church for me is not as much about religion as it is about really kind of introspective, meditative time, spiritual time to center myself, gather my thoughts. Church is just a great environment to do that. The sermons and those kinds of things are important, but that's not really why I go. I could go to an empty church really in the morning, and it's just as powerful for me as if there's, you know, an actual mass, because what's important is the space. And so I go into a sacred space, and then from there, I start my day. I proceed with my meetings. My calendar is, you know, the centerpiece of how my day is going to look. The day before, I have reviewed my calendar through reminders that trigger anything I need to prepare for the next day. So I'm looking at the next day. Every day I'm looking at the next day and determining what my preparation needs to be. Because sometimes I'll need to have a certain keynote presentation that I'm going to give to somebody that day, or I have to give myself enough time to go from point A to point B. There's always things that you have to prepare for and be aware of are coming up the next day. Podcast with Ginny, you know. So all of these things have to be, you know, determined, right? And so that's all part of the routine. And so then the day proceeds. And throughout the day, I'm course correcting. As I'm going through the busyness of the day, I am making adjustments. I am, doubly preparing, right? So I have my preparation the day before, which is more logistics. But when I actually get to the moment, because I do a lot of meetings a lot of days, or I'm actually doing my job that day, either doing a speech or working with an artist or building a studio or consulting with a client, all of those things, just before I go into what I'll call the moment, I am doing like quick little things that I consider spiritual nourishment, right? So I'll do things like, I'll do like 30 seconds of what I call an energy bundle. And I'll just do this and I'll collect all my positive energy. And I'll literally do this for 30 seconds and then turn it around. It's something I learned from a yoga expert. And that will collect all of the positive energy and all of the power that I want to bring that I have inside of me to this person or group that they have given their time for me to give to them.
There's a few things that you said there, which I found really different from what I've kind of studied. I love studying people's morning routines and what they do to set themselves up for the day and set themselves up for success in turn by doing that. And one thing that you said was a lot of the books that I've read about, you know, the Miracle Morning or the Millionaire Morning or whatever kind of morning routine that people have, one of the things that they say is your morning always starts the night before. But you've kind of gone one level deeper where you're looking at it the night before, but you're also adding little reminders that for you to remember how to kind of, you know, prepare yourself for that day, which is really, really unique. How did you come to that? Like, did you experiment that or did that just happen now?
It was through a series of just evolving. You know, I've done a lot of work on myself. David Frangioni, I hope, is going to be remembered long after I'm gone for some contributions, for some great projects that, they'll still be with us, for some books that I've authored that, you know, I think will be with us for, you know, many, many years. And, the legacy of my foundation and other things that I've put a lot of energy into contributing. But what a lot of people won't know is David Frangioni during his lifetime will have been the man of a million mistakes. And I have just made so many mistakes. And in all of the mistakes, I've tried to learn. And I've tried to take them and say, okay, this didn't work out well for you or for anybody else or for whoever was involved in it. You gotta, you know, what happened? And I've had coaches, mentors, of course, books, studies, just always trying to improve. So to answer your question, that's the context I needed to give you because it wouldn't make sense otherwise. Like I didn't just come up with it. It's as I'm trying to correct, as I'm trying to improve and evolve and be a better David Frangioni for the world and for the people closest to me, which is a daily situation. I mean, it's a daily challenge, we'll call it, that everybody has. Everybody's got, you know, the world in front of them to cope with every day and they do the best they can as I do. In that, I figured out, you know, combinations of taking routines that worked for other people. I mean, I've tried all kinds of routines. The one I described is the one I landed on, but there were all kinds of variations. And I found that this was the one that served me the best. One of the best compliments I ever got was when I was working with the Bee Gees, who, you know, of course, Barry Gibbs, the only one alive with us right now. But at the time, of course, Robin and Morris and the band was alive and well, late 90s. Everything was going good for them just before the untimely passing of Morris. And they said to me, one of the guys in the band said, the reason we like working with you is because you wear a belt and suspenders, which was a very British way of saying that. You know, you have a plan B, a plan A, a plan C. Like, you know, we feel good. We feel confident and secure that we've handed the ball to somebody that's not going to let us down. And I really worked hard. And this routine is part of that, is making sure it's all based around if I'm going to do the job, there can't be anything left to chance. And I've got to be prepared. I got to be ready. I got to go in there and really over deliver whatever someone is paying me to do.
The Ginny Show. The Ginny Show. It's freaking hilarious, except when it's not.
I like how you've really set your mindset to over deliver. And you're also really cognizant of how you show up It seems to be a very intentional thing that you do. I'm curious to know too, David, like you talked about lots of mistakes that you made. What would you say was one of the biggest lessons that you learned in those mistakes? Or it could be a series of lessons, but what would you say is the biggest?
Well, I think one of the biggest is don't be afraid to let your past be in the past and try to unlearn things that you might have learned subconsciously that don't serve you any longer because you just kind of get on autopilot. And in my case, I had traumas from my early childhood of being ridiculed and my mom and dad trying to nurture and console me, challenges and struggles of just kind of losing myself in some of these escapes that were healthy outlet escapes, but were challenges, you know, like we were trying to find coping mechanisms without even realizing what we were doing. So as life goes on, as you get older, it's just natural. And I think most people fall into this. I certainly did, where you just are, you have an older version of your younger self. And that's not something that will, you know, all of that does not necessarily serve you. Parts of it will, but parts of it need to stay back where they belong at the time of the trauma. And that's been a hard lesson to go through.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, David. It seems like you've had some amazing influences, perhaps in your parents as well. And that kind of brings me to my next question. Who are the biggest influences in your life that keep you on a very intentional path of creating the life that you want by design?
Well, you know, it's cumulative, right? So of course, it first and foremost, God. I'm a believer in a higher power. I'm a believer in faith. And at some point you leave it in God's hands and, you know, there's your plan, my plan, our plan, and his plan always wins. And so that's the first and foremost principle. And then, of course, my parents, who are no longer with us, my dad died in 96, my mom in 04, close friends, of course, my wife and family, and some mentors that I've had that are people that are, you know, that I've either learned from through studying, like mentors, like I'll call Wayne Dyer, who I never met, but studied a lot of his work and watched a lot of his work and speeches and read his books, et cetera, and really been able to learn some things from him. And then more hands-on mentors. Mastin Kipp's been a hands-on mentor. Gary Grant. You know, some people that are in my world that kind of in my inner circle that have helped with guidance and influence.
Fantastic. I'm also curious to know too, you know, you've said about your circle of influence and what they've kind of shared with you to help you create the life that you have. What was your biggest takeaway from what they've taught you? I know you said it's cumulative, but you may not be able to be specific as a result, but I'd love to know if you could sum up them in one word or one action or something like that, what would it be?
Faith.
It seems to be a very important thing for you, faith, David. Like you mentioned, you know, your belief in God's plan and God always wins. And I'm 100% with you there. I think the divine plan or whatever name you call God or whatever you substitute as God in your version, I 100% agree there. It seems to be a very important part of your life.
It is. And faith gives you the strength that you need. If faith is the engine, you know, strength is the fuel. And what that leads to, right? Because we can just say all these words and we can say all the right things and we can talk about all the rah, rah, rah. But it really comes down to action. It really comes down to like, what do you actually do in your life? The faith that I have is what, and the strength that I get from that faith helps me to do even in the face of adversity, challenges, setbacks, you know, all the things that happen in life as you're on your journey, and don't give up. You know, you can't win the race if you're not running it, and you can't listen to other people because people have all sorts of opinions. You know, some people will tell you you're not ready to run the race. Some people will tell you you're too good for the race. Some people will tell you that you've been running it long enough, stop now. Like, you'll get all kinds of opinions. And I think early on, when there was no evidence of my being successful and I was working for nothing, other than as far as money, I wasn't getting paid anything really. It was $75 a week playing gigs and, you know, it was costing me more than I was making.
Wow.
And all of the, well, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old playing all these jobs and projects and out there trying to learn technology a little bit later. And it's just all about trying to be good at what you do and not really, I didn't really think I was in a place to make a living because I hadn't gotten good enough yet. I was trying to monitor when I was ready. And fortunately, I've been a pretty good monitor of that. I'm not an analysis paralysis kind of person. I'm more of like a get in and go. But the fact is that I really was able to really get in there and focus and go forward. And people would say, you don't really know what you're doing. They'd have their own opinion. Oh, you haven't been doing it long enough. And other people would say, oh, well, you've already been doing this for a year or two. Why aren't you more successful? Like everybody had all these opinions. And I just was able to kind of tune out the noise and just say, I'm going to be successful or not on my own decisions. And then I'll be okay with that. Because if I do fail, I know that it's on me. And it wasn't because I listened to this person or that person. And even though I had guidance, I made my own decisions. And, you know, I did achieve a lot of success. You know, it was due to that real soul focus mentality.
Fantastic. What I loved what you said there, David, was you really did the work. Like, not only did you have an intention to learn as much as you did, but you put in the work and you weren't attached to the monetary outcome of putting in that work. And I think that is a core trait when it comes to business, where you're thinking long-term and constantly in every action. It's not always about the monetary result or the gain that you get, but you're always intentionally putting one foot in front of the other. And you're thinking, you know, eventually over time, this is going to pay off. And you've really kind of, you know, personified that in what you've been doing and everything that you've said. I'm curious to know too, if there's advice that you could give people who are looking to go all in on their talents or all in on their passions, what's something that you've learned other than what you've shared that you think would be beneficial to someone going through that?
I think the first thing is really be sure of what your passion is and be sure of what's important to you. And then find a pathway forward based on what you want to do. I mean, the best case scenario is that your passion is actually what you do for every day. Right? It doesn't turn into a hobby. It's actually something you can spend your life doing. That's the best case. That's what you really ultimately want to create in your life. If that's not possible and it's just for whatever reason, timing or the kind of passion that you have is just not conducive to making a living, then make sure you carve out enough time to keep your spirit up and to nurture your soul and really find time for that passion. I think that a happy person is a person that has that time for their passion and has that time for their priorities.
I think also, you know, putting that in your calendar or your diary or your whatnot and then building your life or your week around that, it's a very intentional step to do. You've dropped so much wisdom here, David. This has been amazing. But also that we've had all these points that you've brought up, I'm going to ask you a really deep and loaded question at the moment. How would you define happiness?
Well, living a life every day that you want to, that's fulfilling, important, and enriching to you. Happiness has been very complicated for a lot of people, and it's been made to be complicated for a lot of people. You ask about happiness and it's simplistic in nature, right? But there's so many layers and levels and aspects to it that it's not simple. It's simplistic to understand happiness, but it's not simple and it's much harder to achieve. But in our society, all over the world, it's been made out to be really complicated. Like, you know, people think, you know, these really just unrealistic values that they're taught, like, you know, oh, you want to be happy? Win the lottery. Oh, you want to be happy? Live in a big house. You want to be happy? You know, drive this car or wear these clothes or buy this jewelry. It's become so complicated because, of course, none of those things will make somebody happy. They will for a period of time, but, you know, it's been proven scientifically over and over again that, you know, material item, if it lasts 3 days, it's a long time. As far as the happiness component of our DNA, the chemical portion of what is actually released inside of us that creates the happiness and the feeling, like the material stuff will create that for, you know, 3 days. I mean, maybe in some cases a week, but it's very, very short. So that's why I'll, in one of my businesses, Audio One, where we deal with very wealthy people. We build home theaters in beautiful homes for very discerning clients. We do home automation systems for some of the most successful people in the world. And they're amazing people that we get to work with. And I'll see in those travels, this is over almost 30 years now of meeting different individuals, that, you know, you'll see people in some cases, and it doesn't apply to all, of course, but you'll see people in some cases like, okay, like every day they're buying some big thing that any one of the days would be like a normal wealthy person's like dream would be one of the days, but they do it every day because they have unlimited means for however their circumstance is. And they're never happy because it's just, that's, you know, they're feeding, but they're only feeding one element of what's really going to make them happy. And they wonder why they're not happy, even though they have everything under the sun and they continue to quench that thirst with more. But the more is single focused and it's, you know, all the other holes that are going on in their happiness world are not being filled because they're just looking at one particular thing, whether it's, you know, buying something or, you know, whatever it is. And so happiness can get very complicated in being and feeling, but the reality is it doesn't have to be. And as soon as you become more and more aware of what makes you happy and you take action to have people in your life that feed that happiness and that feeling, you know, the faster you get there. Because I'll tell you, everybody has a last day on earth and we don't know what that is. But when you get to it, be nice if between now and that day, you know, you were happy every day and you could live a life that was meaningful on the face of where we are.
Wow. David, you've dropped like so many gems in that. And I like how you said happiness, the notion is simplistic, but the process isn't always as perceived to be simplistic, and how there's all these definitions around the world.
It's not.
Simple is not easy. No. That's a very profound quote. That's almost like an oxymoron, but it's truth. It's absolute truth there. David, please tell the good people of the Genius Show where they can find you and learn more about you and your awesome business, Audio One.
Well, Audio One is audio-one.com, right? It's all spelled out. David Frangione are my socials. So it's all one word at David Frangione. My website is davidjfrangione.com. You know, love to hear from your listeners and thank you. I'm very grateful for being on your show today. I've been looking forward to being on this show, you know, since we started planning it a while ago. And here we are. I'm on the Genie Show. Hello, world. And live from Miami, it's David Frangione. And thank you for having me.
David, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm definitely going to go away and re-listen to this because there's so many truth bombs that you dropped in this that I've kind of tweaked my perspective on certain things and I never looked at certain things in a certain way. And I love how, you know, for someone who can only see through one eye, you have amazing vision.
Well, thank you. That's profound. Don't forget that one, everybody. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to take that little tidbit. That's going to be out there. So thank you. Could you say that again, please?
For someone who can only see through one eye clinically, you have amazing vision. That's true.
Thank you.
You're welcome. David, thank you so much for spending time with me on the Genie Show. I can't wait to share your story with the world.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Genie. And I'll see you all soon. The Genie Show. Oh.